This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, special bonus podcast here. I'm sitting here at the Celtics practice facility with now an ex-Celtic, a guy that spent 5 years on the Celtics bench as an assistant coach, 7.5 years as a player with the team. He's now the head coach at Evansville in the Missouri Valley Conference. Walter McCarty joins me on the podcast. What's up, Walt? Congratulations.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming out and happy to be on here.
So just walk me through this opportunity because – you know, here you are. You're a longtime NBA veteran. You're, you know, sitting on the bench on the coaching staff of one of the best teams in basketball, working for, I think, one of the best head coaches in basketball. You decide you want to go into the college ranks. Just walk me through your thought process on why college, why Evansville, all that.
Well, I've always wanted to be a D1 college head coach, even getting back into the pros, and it started with Rick Pitino at the University of Louisville when I was there for 3 years. I just loved the interaction, the teaching, the development, helping with young men. Not just only on the court, but being that father figure and helping them get to the next step. Just being a success in life. And I really enjoyed those relationships. And, you know, getting back into the pros, especially coming back here to Boston, being with Brad and Danny Ainge, they both knew of my love for college basketball. And I always told them, you know, if the right job comes up, you know, I want to be able to take that job, and I'm going to be looking for college jobs while I'm here, just so you guys know. I said, I'm happy to be here. I love being here. It's a great job, and I could be here forever. But if the right college job comes along, I would love to be able to take it. So being at the University of Evansville came up, and just knowing everybody there, you know, I started getting text messages, hey, would you have any interest and been the head coach of the school. And I said, well, just knowing a little bit of the history and just knowing people there, if they provided me with the right resources, we could make it happen. And, you know, got a phone call and had some good conversations with the AD, and that turned into like an interview phone call, which went really, really, really well. And I think I flew in maybe a week and a half later and just knocked it out.
Mm-hmm. Your coaching experience is at the pro level. What do you know about the challenges of college coaching, recruiting? I mean, how well-versed do you think you're going to be to kind of hit the ground running at Evansville?
I think I've been very lucky. Being at Louisville for 3 years and working under Rick Pitino, I think that I've been well rehearsed. Even being here with the Pacers and being here with the Celtics, I've always kept those recruiting connections. I have really good friends and high school friends who coach in college, and a lot of the guys that I know, I've always kept those relationships. I watch college ball all the time, just to see what they're doing, and you know, I'm just always around it. So I think I'm ready. I think I've been ready for quite some time, and this whole time, this is what I've been preparing for the last 5 or 6 years, and I think I'm gonna do just fine. And you know, basketball is basketball, but I think it's a different, you know, leading your own program. So of course, you know, I gotta get out and shake hands and get in the community. But the greatest thing about this is I'm at home. I know everyone. Mm-hmm. I know it's just been fun to be back. The whole city's excited. I think we've just today we've almost tripled season seats sales for our arena, and that they haven't had this many people buy season tickets in 2 years. We've tripled that amount already just in 2 or 3 days. So the city's excited. I'm excited, and I think I'm ready to take this challenge. You know, working for Rick Pitino, Jim O'Brien, and you know, now Brad. I think that I've been prepared and worked for some really good coaches. Mm-hmm.
Evansville, as you mentioned, it's your backyard there. Did they recruit you when you were in high school? Obviously,
they
went
did.
To Kentucky, big, you know, bigger program.
They did indeed recruit me. It was my third school. The way that I played, I always knew I was going to Kentucky. Mm. I loved Evansville's just as close as to UK as it is to IU, and just their style of play like sold me from day one. And if I knew if I could, if I would be recruited by Kentucky, that's where I was going. So UE would have been my third choice, but things would have had to go really bad at Kentucky and then Purdue for me to come to UE.
How do you sell Evansville to a recruit? What's going to be kind of your sales pitch, and what kind of kids do you expect to go after?
Well, they should think our style of play, the way we're going to play, is going to be very attractive to kids. I think we have really, really good facilities, maybe the best facilities in the MVC with our own practice floor and 11,000-seat arena. And I just think what my career, what I've been able to do in my career, and, you know, I think the connections to people that I know, I think that's going to be very attractive to players to come play. I think that Evansville was a great city. We have great support from the city. And I think all of those things, you know, once kids start coming around, see the type of stuff we're doing and seeing the support of the city and getting inside that arena, you know, most colleges don't have 11,000-seat arena. That's really nice. So we're excited. I think that we have a chance to be a very special place. And I think with the way Loyola is playing right now, that lets us know, hey, we can be successful and we can get kids who want to come here and compete at this level.
Did you, I mean, you play for Patino and you go to a big time college, but when you're working for Brad, do you ever have any conversation with him about recruiting at a smaller school? I mean, Brad did a great job in Gordon Hayward. He got some blue chip guys. Obviously his coaching stood out, but did you ever have any of those conversations about the challenges and the kind of kids you go after at a smaller school?
Yeah, we had a lot of conversations. Brad and I were, I love Brad. Brad and I, we text all the time. I think we were on the phone yesterday before the game, about 30 minutes, just always talking about basketball and what guys you want to recruit. But, like, you know, Brad at Butler, like, no one knew Gordon Hayward. Like, he had tennis offers, and they were able to come in. And, you know, I want to recruit kids, number one, that enhances our culture. Guys who want to be there, guys who are about team, guys who work hard, but also guys who are going to develop into being really good players. And I think that's what Brad did. Brad got players, guys who can play, but he was able to take their game to another level just through teaching and just working on the proper fundamentals and just recruiting skilled guys. So, you know, I want to go after guys who are skilled, who can play many different positions, but guys who have a ceiling, who can get better and better and better at their time at the university.
So what's Walter McCarty's coaching style going to be? You played for Patino, worked under Patino. That's one style. Brad Stevens in the pros, that's a totally different style. What's your coaching style going
to
be?
Well, we definitely want to pressure the ball, wear teams down. I'm not saying full on press, but we want to push the ball.
You remember how much fun that was as a player?
It was a lot of fun, but you have to have the athletes and the guys exactly. On the bench to do it. So as we're building, we want to play fast and up-tempo. We want to push the ball. We want to shoot a lot of threes, but we just want to, you know, a lot of the NBA quick hitting actions that we run here with the Celtics is what I want to do. Just ball movement, getting side to side, playing with skilled players who are all a threat, where, you know, you have to guard all five of us. You can't just guard one guy, take one guy out. You know, we're all threats, and just playing through skill.
How prepared are you for that kind of yearly grind that is college basketball coaching? I mean, look, coaching in the pros is tough too, but you know, there's not the recruiting part of it. There's not the you know, it's coaching and not trying to bring in guys. I mean, are you looking at it? Is it a 24-hour-a-day type of job year-round?
Oh, definitely. Listen, I work for Rick Pitino, so I understand what it takes. And I think working for him really prepared me, probably over-prepared me to be able to take this job. So I'm excited about the opportunity. And you know the energy that I have, that's – I can be up all night on the phone or recruiting and doing whatever it is that I have to do in order to make this a successful program. But I love it. I'm one of the few guys that actually enjoyed recruiting when I was at Louisville. I actually enjoyed getting out on the road and speaking with parents and kids. And just for me, that was fun. I love creating those relationships. One thing for me, excuse me, is I understand what kids I want to go after of. I don't need to get the top kids, although it may be nice, but I want to get guys who I can teach, guys who want to be here, guys who are skilled, but guys who have a ceiling to grow. It's just not about recruiting. It's about being able to evaluate, and you evaluate the kids that you need and how to get them to be the players, you know, teach them how to be successful in your program. So to me, it's, yes, we have to recruit, but the most important thing is we have to evaluate.
What do you take away from Patino, your experience there, that you take to the college ranks as a coach?
I think I've been very fortunate for the guys who I worked for, and I would say this is the same with Brad. Is the most important thing that I take is that they're preparation. You know, you're not going to surprise them with anything. If you've done it before, they've seen it, and just preparing your team and having them ready to play from opponent standpoint, but also with what the type of things that we want to do out there. Guys are very prepared and able to execute.
You played for Patino both in college and in the pros. You're now working for Brad Stevens. Why, you know, they're two different types of college coaches, right? I mean, Patino came to the pros. It didn't exactly work out here in Boston. Brad Stevens has worked out and then some so far. What's the difference between those two coaches in the pro ranks?
I think they approach the game kind of the same way from a preparation standpoint. I think what sets Brad apart is this is relationship with the guys, but also always having the guys on par with knowing this is what's happening, this is what we're doing. But also, Brad is so efficient with the guys, with their time away from the court, with the time on the court, efficient with them, getting their rehab or recovery or workouts. There's no wasted time with Brad. You know, we're on the floor for whether it's an hour and 20 minutes or whether it's 40 minutes. For out of those 40 minutes, he's very efficient and we're getting to what exactly we need to do to get better. We're always getting better no matter how long you're on the court. With small, he's really good at that. Now, I think that's another thing that I've taken away from him. You don't have to be on the court for 2 hours or do this to get stuff done. This is what we need to do. Let's focus on this and let's get better and let's get out.
From your perspective, a coach that didn't play the game, didn't coach at a major college level or a pro level, how has he been able to engender such respect? Because whether it's Isaiah Thomas or Kyrie Irving or any of the guys that have come through here, it seems like they all have a high level of respect for him.
Well, a lot of people don't know this. Brad was a player. Brad averaged like 30 points in high school. And, you know, he played at a small school, but which is a really good basketball school. Brad is just, and you know Brad, but by me saying this, people aren't going to understand. But, like, when you're around Brad, he's infectious. His attitude, the way he carries himself, the respects that he has for other people. And it's like how he treats other people. And he's always in constant contact and checking in. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to, like, if you're a player, you're not happy with their time or whatever it is, it's hard for them to go the other way because he's done so much to not only help you but respect you. He's giving you all the things that you need to be successful. Now, whether you grasp those or you take those and run with it, it's totally up to you. But, you know, Brad's a guy who he always takes the blame. If you lose a game, win a game, something goes wrong, even though it's not his fault or whatever, he never throws his guys under the bus. He always says, that's my fault. I got to have my guys ready. Well, this is my fault. I should have did this. And just the way he carries himself and how he prepares, I think guys see that and they respect that. And I've never seen Brad disrespect or anyone ever. And I just think that the way he treats other people is really, really important.
I thought Jim O'Brien did a lot of that too when he was in Boston, taking on the blame for whatever something went wrong there. I remember when if Antoine went like 0-for-11, it was good shots, all good shots that Obi would put up. Can you take that attitude and use it with 18, 19-year-olds? Does it translate when you're going from 20 and 30-somethings?
I think so. I think the biggest thing, too, that I've learned from Brad is get to the next play. You know, you can't, like, you know, you have to teach and get better and show them, all right, this is why we do this, this is why we do this, this is why we can't do this. And players have to understand we're going to make mistakes, but we have to be able to get to the next play and, you know, have to be able to move on. I think that's something he really does well. I think that's something his teams do really well. And I think that's why guys like Abdul Nader and Shimi Ogilvy and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they're young, but they're having success. And people are like, how are they doing this? Because we know they're going to mess up. We know, but let's get to the next play. We're not going to dwell on it. We're not going to bring you in halftime and chew you out about it and say, well, it's a teaching moment. Let's teach it and get over it and get to the next play. And I think he's really fabulous at doing that.
You're gonna have to stop talking to other players on the sideline. You've been known for that, Walt. You've got a bit of a rep that have a little running conversation with some stars out there.
I know it must be so boring right now. Micah Shrewsbury texted me the other day. He's like, "Man, it's just not the same. No one talking to these free throw shooters." But it was just fun. You know, sometimes the games are long, and people would be surprised how much interaction there is with players. Players come up and they say stuff all mm-hmm. the time about me being the former player, and just knowing some of these guys that it's just fun. And I just can't believe that so many guys would just respond and talk to me and like, "Listen, dude, I'm trying to distract you, and you're allowing me to distract you." And it just became one of those things where they look over and acknowledge me and they miss, and you know, I'm like, "All right, I got you."
So what's your favorite conversation over the years when you think of all the guys you've yapped with a little bit from that bench?
Man, I just, guys with Stephen Curry and, you know, those guys are shooting free throws and they're so good, and you know, "Man, your form is so great. Like, you've never missed a free throw. Like, your left hand is just perfect." Like, you know, and they get up there and they miss, and they look over at me, they shake their head. So one of the good ones was recently, we were playing, I think it was Lance Stevenson. Mm-hmm. And I had Lance, he was a rookie. I spent a lot of time with him, so we had a great relationship. And we're just talking, and he didn't understand. I'm giving him praise, but at the same time, I'm trying to get him to be selfish and just try to take over, start shooting. And after a while, he comes back, "I know what you're trying to do." So it's great. I've had plenty of conversations. You know, LeBron will come over all the time.
Yeah, you don't shy away. Like, from LeBron to Lance, it doesn't really matter who's out there. If you think you can get to somebody, yeah. I mean, seen you.
They all come over. Carmelo and, you know, missing the two free throws. Oklahoma City a couple weeks ago. Just, you know, I'm riding those guys the whole game, just talking and just – It's just been really fun for every guy. They all come over and say hello before the game, just from those little, you know, sort of like taunting episodes, and mm-hmm. like we've become friends from it. And they know in the beginning of the game, like, "How many are you gonna give me tonight? I know you're gonna give me one," you know. And you know, it starts with before the game, Carmelo and Russell. "Hey man, guys, just take the night off, man. Just get some rest. And you guys play back to back. Just take the night off." And it just starts and just creates this long game, but just going back and forth, and it's a lot of fun.
Do the other coaches kind of look at what's going on there? And I mean, you're just having a running dialogue sometimes with these guys.
I don't know if they know or not, but like a lot of times, man, if you watch us, we're over there cracking up because to some of the responses or things they do. And I mean, it's just not with the players; it's with the officials as well. I have a lot of fun with these officials. I probably should have been thrown out of 30 or 40 games, but we've had a great rapport. They know it's all fun, and mm-hmm. we really enjoy it.
You're, as I mentioned, 12 and a half years total here in Boston. Your best memory of your times here is what?
I just think the fans, man. You know, Tommy Heinsohn, just being able to, you know, as a player, just go over to Tommy Heinsohn's house, and you got Satch Sanders over there, you got Bob Cousy over there, you got John Havlicek over there, and just having this, just being a sponge. You know, just
that's
listening.
Pretty badass. Yeah. To have all those guys in one. That's pretty. That actually happened. All those guys. Kind
oh
of
yeah,
in,
like,
all right.
As a player,
a little barbecue
there.
Kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, and it was just sitting out in the backyard mm-hmm. and just, I'm like, "Oh my goodness, this is awesome," you know. And those experiences were better than any playing experience. People always ask me, I'm like, be able to get that knowledge and to meet Bill Russell, just sit there on the bench and talk to Bill Russell about playing for 15 minutes. Are having conversations with Red Auerbach in the locker room, mm-hmm. which is all those guys are so great. And those are some of my most memorable, just those conversations with those guys. But obviously when we played there, we were very young, trying to figure it all out. Just watching Paul mature and Antoine do what he did. I think the most memorable things came off the court, mm-hmm. just being able to interact with fans and like the former players, the former greats.
Mm. You were part of the Eastern Conference Finals team in 2002, right?
Right.
That was, yeah. That, you know, underrated year for this franchise because, you know, before then, the 90s were terrible right. For the Celtics. And that team with you guys and young Antoine and Paul. I mean, just getting to that conference finals was a pretty significant accomplishment for that Celtic team.
It was, and it was also about, you know, winning the city back over. Like, our fans really started to come out strong. And, you know, at the time, it was the Fleet Center. The Fleet Center was loud. Mm-hmm. And it was just a fun time. We were building something really special, and, you know, guys were playing hard, but guys were playing for one another, which was the Celtic way. Like, you put on this jersey, it's about being Celtics. And that was the start of that, turning that around.
Mm. Have you heard from Rick Pitino since you took the job?
I have, man. I text my man all the time. He's so excited.
You want a job on the staff to come out? I mean, it's near to, no, it's not far. Like, you know,
I think he's enjoying the good Florida weather right now.
Mm. What do you look for? I mean, this is your first opportunity to put together a staff of your own, mm-hmm. to kind of flesh out, you know, your own kind of operation there. What do you look for in a staff as you're kind of preparing a head coaching job?
Basketball junkies, mm-hmm. Guys who really know the game, but guys who are really good people, guys who kind of, who are fun to be around, guys who I trust is going to always make the right decision, you know, when they're away from me or whatever they're doing when they're recruiting. But, you know, the guys who just do it the right way, guys who know how to build a good culture, but guys who've been through the fire a little bit as far as from a coaching standpoint of seeing everything and just helped me to be able to have my team prepare. But just guys who you love to be around, guys who can help you create that culture, that winning culture.
So for people that aren't familiar with the task at hand that you have kind of in front of you, what's the state of your program right now? I mean, how big a job are you taking on?
It was a really big job. You know, just trying to continue to fill out the roster, you know, possibly having two guys who may be leaving your program who were the best teams, best players from the year before, really getting your donors and your boosters and everybody excited about the program and trying to fill an arena, you know, that hasn't been filled in such a long time. Trying to get the community back involved in the university. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot, you know, but it's been fun meeting new people and just doing it together. They have the resources to be a special program, and they've been there. I watched them as a kid coming to, you know, Aces games, and it was a lot of fun, and that's what we want to get it back to.
Did you, I mean, as you're making this decision, you know, you're, as we mentioned, the franchise that you're leaving, the job that you're leaving, I mean, was it a tough call to make that move?
Oh, it's a very tough call, and, you know, especially when you have family and you have a daughter in high school, and just leaving my comfort zone here with Brad, with Danny, with people I know. They were awesome. This organization is awesome from top to bottom. When you talk about Wick Rosbeck and Steve Pagliuca and so on to Danny Ainge and Mike Zarin down to Brad and our coaching staff. I've never had so much fun in basketball as a coach. Like, we all support each other, but we all, you know, we get our work done. So from that standpoint, you know, to leave that is scary, but it also shows me this is how I have to build my staff. This is how I have to build my program. This is the culture. It's a huge lesson for me. I'm glad that I've been a part of it because now I can go somewhere and feel confident knowing that I know how you should do it. I know how to get it done. And if we can complement what they do here, you know, we're going to be successful.
Couple of questions about your experience in Boston. Going back to the Pitino days, that Celtic team, a lot of Kentucky guys on it from at various points. You, Antoine, Ron Mercer, Tony Delks, name a few of them. Why didn't it all kind of translate? Why didn't it come together under Rick with that group?
Well, I think he's one of those guys because we were familiar with his system. We were familiar with him as a coach and how he worked. And the more guys that he had buying in, would help with the other guys buying in. But I think when you're losing, it doesn't help. And at that time, we were very young. We were very young, and everybody was trying to find themselves with young players, you know, trying to find themselves, but also everybody's trying to get those contracts. And when you have those two, it's not good because he's trying to win. He's trying to implement what he wants to do, but all the other guys, everybody has individual goals and what they're trying to do, and it just didn't work. We were so young, and it's just like, you know, watching Sacramento today, mm-hmm. or watching Phoenix, or watching these young guys just trying to figure it out. You have so much on your plate, and until you get 5 and 6 years in where you understand what it's about, and you start adding these veterans and all this stuff, then you can start to really hone in, like, okay, this is why we're here, this is what we're doing. But we were just too young. We were just too young.
When he left the team in that middle of the 02 season, was that a shock for you at that time?
I remember him coming up to me. We were on the road. We were in Miami. Mm-hmm. And
that's where he left after the Miami game. Yeah,
I'm warming up, and he calls me back into the locker room to speak to him, and he says, "Hey, Walt, this is my last game." And it was a shock. We knew it had been kind of tough on him because what he was accustomed, and you know, a lot of run-ins with players because it was tough winning and, losing as much as we were. But it was a shock because I've never known him to step away from something. He's always came out on top. And I think that he would have if he would have just had a little more time. I think the bad thing is he wanted it so fast, and it just didn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to build something. You have to build it the right way, and he wanted to win so fast. So if he didn't think he could win with you, a player coming here, no, he got rid of you. Mm-hmm. So there was never any continuity. There was never any carryover. You know, guys are in, guys are out, guys are in, guys are out, guys are in, guys are out. And it just made it tough. There was never any carryover. And I think he just wanted to do it too fast, and it just couldn't be done with a young team like that.
How much do you think you've been here long enough that you know the pressure that's on every team in the city to win? I mean, it's not like many other cities, because if you don't win, you don't have a lot of grace period to grow. How much do you think that wore on Rick during his time here?
I think it wore him a lot because, you know, he's driven, he wants to win. But what I also think is that he put a lot of pressure on himself right away. And I think he would have came in and said, "Hey, this is going to take 4 or 5 years. Let's be patient. Let's get the team we want. Let's let these players grow a little bit. Let's try to see if we can get somebody in free agency." I think it would have been much different. But I think coming in, he wanted to do it right away, put pressure on himself, got into it a little bit with the media. I just think he just tried to do it too fast, and it didn't work.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you was, what was it like for you last year watching Isaiah do what he did? I mean, it didn't end in a championship, obviously, but that I saw it from my vantage point, one of the most inspirational playoff performances throughout that I've ever seen. What was that like for you?
Oh, man, it was a lot of fun. We're so excited for him. Like the hope that he gave, not just the city and people around, but like the hope that he gave his teammates, man, just the way he played. And I love IT. You know, he still texts me to this day. I love him. IT was always IT. No matter win, lose, he was the same giving, loving person, you know. And he was going to stick around and face the media, whether he won, lost, or you just had to respect him. He's that type of guy that you had to respect him because he was always the same. He worked hard. He was in the gym longer than anybody. He really put the time in. He put the time in the community. He just did all the right things. And I think people were even appreciating more for that because it was, from him, it was genuine. Hmm. He did it because he loved to do it, and he understood the platform that he had. And that just made him even more special as a player and the things that he did on the court.
He was playing, can think about the physical pain and emotional pain that he played through during that run. I mean, it really won't go down in the record books because the season ended the conference finals. But if you were around it and you witnessed it, it really was something to see.
Yeah, he's a tough sucker, man. He didn't want to come out the games. He played through pain and he'd get right back up. Go down, he'd get right back up. And I just really respect him and commend him for what he was able to do, just not for him, but what he did for us. You know, we're not at the All-Star game, you know, if not for IT, you know. So he was able to put us on the platform too as assistant coaches, and, you know, with Brad, just, you know, we owe a lot to him.
You going to adjust to that lifestyle of, not the charter jets there? I know some college coaches that went pro, couldn't go back to college because they got a taste of this lifestyle.
I've always been a humble guy, And for me, it's not about the lifestyle. It's just about the people you're around and just being able to teach these young guys. And, you know, that's where I get my glory from, just being able to teach these guys and make sure that they have a great experience and help them on and off the court be grow up as men. So will I miss this? Yeah, but I'm fine. It's not a big deal to me.
Does your singing career continue back in Evansville?
Just only in the hallways.
Okay.
And shower. In the office.
Yeah. The office.
That's it. But I've done that here. Like, coming here, you know, I haven't recorded since, like, 2012. Mm-hmm. So I understood, like, for me to reach my goals that, you know, do I love singing and playing guitar? Yeah, I can do that. I can do that in my room. But to be taken seriously and to accomplish everything I need to accomplish, that, you know, I can't be out performing and, you know, I have to let people know that I'm serious about coaching and leading and running the program, that's what I'm going to do.
You were telling me before we started this that your phone has been blowing up, and since we've been sitting here, your phone continues to blow up.
Man, I didn't know I had so many. I thought I was a popular person. I didn't know I had so many friends. Once you can start hiring people.
See, you spent years chasing a job, and now you've got it, and now you got all the people chasing you for a job with you.
Yeah, it's I'm not complaining. You know, I made a. To some of the guys, friends who have head coaching jobs, and especially with Brad, I'm like, you guys didn't warn me about this. Like, mm-hmm. I knew some people would come out the woodworks and stuff, but it was just, you know, I'm looking at my phone. I got 200 messages. I'm like, what is going on? So, but I get it. I'm not mad at people trying to hustle or trying to, you know, get a job. But you know, at the same time, you know, I have relationships, and, you know, I know what's going to work for me and who I can trust. And, you know, if I don't really know you, I'm not really trying to bring you on because I don't know you. Mm-hmm. Unless you come highly recommended from a Brad Stevens or a Rick Pitino or somebody like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you, the coaches that you look for, I mean, do you go out there and look for guys that have been recruiting in that area? I mean, you mentioned the passion for basketball, but mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of guys do you lean on? Like those hardcore recruiters, the guys with experience, extensive experience coaching in the college ranks?
Not at all. I lean on guys who can evaluate, and it doesn't matter what number's in front of their name. Mm-hmm. As this guy can play. This guy, he's skilled. He can help our program. We can get him to where we need to be as a team and be successful with him. So that's what I lean on. I lean on guys who I can trust. And guys who are just good people. I think that if you can do that, you can be successful. And, you know, these guys have been in college coaching their whole lives. The guys I'm looking at, I can't say names, but and they know the game. They know how it goes. So
can you lean on your when you're recruiting, how much of an advantage do you think it is that you can say you both played in the NBA, coached in the NBA? Because even kids that are looking at Evans, everyone's mm-hmm. got the dream of going to the NBA. How much of an advantage do you think that can be for you?
I think I do because I've been here and I know what it takes to get here. Also, you know, I have the connections that, you know, if you need to hear from an NBA, some NBA personnel, something like, how good are you? Do I need to stay? Do I need to leave? What do I need to do? What do I need to work on? I can get that honest feedback and say, hey, this is what we have to do. And, you know, we can work on those things. But I also think that, you know, for me, the connections that I've built along the way, you know, my phone's blown up. I got so many people trying to give me players and trying to say, hey, this player can play this. And, you know, just watching a lot of film, and they're right. These some good kids. So I think that gives me an advantage that everybody wants to have some type of relationship or help me out in some way because I've helped a lot of people out along the way and I've been a good person. I've done things the right way. And, you know, people know me from my playing days and people respect that, hey, he knows what he's doing and he's going to be a good coach and he's going to be able to put you in situations where you'd be successful. So I think just by doing it the right way and always being good to people that people are going to, you know, take care of you.
Walt, you've had a great run here in Boston. Good luck in Evansville. I'll let you get back to the 9,000 texts and calls that you're receiving on this day, man. Thanks for joining me. Good luck with everything,
man. You got it. Thank you.